This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Earth Matters. I'm Lee Chui Lin. A new report from Wildlife Monitoring Network Traffic has revealed that Malaysians are turning Facebook into a wildlife marketplace, driving a roaring and often illegal trade in iconic and threatened animals. Trading Faces, a rapid assessment on the use of Facebook to trade wildlife in Peninsular Malaysia, is a report that has revealed that the rise of social media has enabled the creation of a thriving marketplace for wild animals as pets, where one previously didn't exist here in our country. I find out more from Kanita Krishnasamy, Program Manager for Traffic in Southeast Asia, who co-authored the new report. Welcome to the show, Kanita.
Thanks.
So Traffic has been on the hunt for wildlife dealers on the web since 2006, when it conducted a survey of the internet to see whether the trade had made the leap online, which it had. What were some of the ways that dealers were utilizing the internet for the illegal trade of wildlife?
So what we saw in the past really was what was happening on commercial trade platforms, because social media, the whole phenomenon of using social media is fairly new in that sense, and it wasn't as popular, you know, back in 2006. So in Malaysia, we had portals like AdPost and Muda.com in a Malaysia-specific setting that were being used more popularly to sell and buy animals, and that is still going on. But what we've seen is that in recent years, social media has taken on the role that commercial trade platforms played. So it's not just Facebook. In this particular instance, we've looked at what was happening on Facebook, but it's happening on so many other platforms, on WeChat, on WhatsApp, on BBM. It's happening throughout all social media platforms.
Why do you think social media has been on the rise? Is it just because it's been on a rise as a whole and animal trafficking has kind of followed through with that? Or is it something else?
I think traders are simply utilizing any platform to ease trade in that sense. So they're looking for the fastest, easiest, less complicated means of trading animals. And social media is quick. I mean, that's one thing we know about social media. You put something up in 5 minutes, you'll have 100 responses. And I think they're just capitalizing on just how quick social media can reach out to a wide target audience. And it just makes them move animals quicker, and they thrive on that.
Could you give me a brief of the study upon which this report was based? What was the idea behind it? What methodologies did you use?
We started getting a lot of reports from members of the public that were reporting to not just us, but also to the authorities about just how much wildlife was being traded on Facebook. And we looked at it over 5 months and we thought, wow, this is a lot of animals being traded. And we thought it would be really useful to look at this consistently. So we did this for 5 months. We spent 30 minutes a day over 5 months. And this was done from November 2014 to April of last year. So 30 minutes a day for 5 months, and we looked specifically at 14 Facebook groups. Now, a lot of trade is happening on Facebook groups. They establish specialized groups, and these groups, they call themselves specialized groups that are trading in animals. So they, within the group's name itself, there are words like exotic animals, like pets, selling, buying wildlife, and they associate themselves based on the names of these groups. So 30 minutes a day, 5 months, 14 Facebook groups, and the results is basically what we presented in their report. And what we found in very, very basic terms was 80 species of animals being traded. This includes birds, it includes reptiles, and it includes mammals. We found over 100 specific and unique traders that were operating on these 14 Facebook groups. And from these 14 Facebook groups, close to 70,000 people were members of these groups, which means 70,000 people, almost 70,000 people were engaging in these forums. They were asking for prices. They were asking for how soon animals could be shipped to them. So there was a lot of activity. And one group specifically had more than 20,000 members. So that, you know, in that sense, you're engaging with a very, very large audience. Who have a tendency of influencing others to buy wildlife, although they may not specifically have wanted to purchase an animal.
The thing that strikes me most, you know, in terms of what you were describing is the brazenness of the activity to have, you know, you're not even trying to hide what it is that you're doing. If it's in your name, for goodness sake, yeah. Why do you think people are so brazen about doing something that is blatantly illegal? Is it not understanding the law? Is it, I mean, I just can't comprehend the idea that I would publicly join a page like that.
Quite honestly, I think they just don't care. I think they can say what they want and take comfort in the fact that they may not get caught. Because, you know, we looked at 14 groups. The Wildlife Department is looking at so many more groups. And there's so many people who are members of these groups. And as you say, they blatantly do it because they feel that they won't be caught.
One of your co-authors, Sarah Stoner, was quoted in the media as saying that in trading, there's usually a small percentage of people involved in illegal activity. But from this study, you've identified a lot of different people. What are the stats like?
I think what social media does is that it increases the chances of people being involved. And so you don't have a situation where in traditional methods where somebody is poaching in the forest, for example, and sending it to a specific middleman or a specific buyer outside the country, you tend to have a more controlled number of people who are involved. Whereas with social media, it's so open. Anybody can be involved. From some, you know, for all you know, your neighbor's part of this group. You don't know because it's viral nature. It just means that it reaches out to so many more people. So in our specific study, we looked at what was happening only in Peninsula Malaysia. From the 236 posts, we've identified at least 106 unique sellers. And again, from these 14 Facebook groups, close to 70,000 individuals were partaking in these discussions from these groups.
What were these people selling? You know, these 106 different sellers, by and large, what were they trying to trade in?
So here's what we found to be really weird, because we found stuff like, I mean, birds are popular pets, right? You find them in pet stores. So in some instances, it's not that surprising that birds were the most popular animals to be sold. But what really struck us as quite shocking was the number of mammals that were being traded. So sun bears, slow lorises, we had flat-headed cats, we had leopard cats, we had all of these animals that are not just because they're wild animals, but a lot of them are endangered, a lot of them are threatened, and all the animals, all the mammals specifically, are considered totally protected by law, which means they cannot be hunted and they cannot be traded unless there's special permit from the minister. But that rarely ever happens unless you're involved in the zoo, for example. So, you know, the average person on the street would not be able to get any sort of a license or a permit from the Wildlife Department to keep a baby sun bear. And I stress on the word baby because a majority of the animals that we saw in trade were juvenile animals. They were baby animals. The post would say, I have a baby slow loris or I have a baby sun bear, great to bottle feed, easy to handle. And that is really quite worrying because it signifies a high level of poaching of young animals, which means they've been taken away from their mother, from their family at a very, very young age. And young animals cannot survive well outside the wild, in captivity in that sense, without proper care. And most of these individuals who are buying these animals don't have any sort of that experience in caring for a live wild animal, let alone a young animal. So the chances of these animals dying are very, very high.
And were most of these animals our animals, Malaysian animals?
A vast majority of them are native to Malaysia. So yes, they are very likely taken from our forests, and they are being sold in cities, in KL. A lot of these transactions happened in the Klang Valley, but not just in the Klang Valley, they're happening throughout the peninsula.
So what you're saying is we might have just baby sun bears and baby binturongs, you know, just hiding out in people's homes and we don't know where they are necessarily.
Exactly.
Okay, that's very scary.
Yeah, it is very scary. I mean, last year, the Wildlife Department arrested a number of individuals who were trying to sell an orangutan, a baby orangutan. So it's really quite shocking that Malaysians want to keep these mammals as pets. I mean, they are, I suppose there's a certain value in having them as young animals, but eventually they all grow up and they tend to become bigger than you, and keeping them in your house is really not ideal.
And they need space. I mean, exactly. Beyond anything else, they're wild and they need space. You keep saying pets, and I'm wondering, did your findings reveal that that's what the animals are being bought for, primarily as pets, or is it medicine?
No, every single one of them were live animals, and they were to meet the demand for pets. That was really obvious to us, because every single animal was a live animal and a vast majority of them were pets. And so the advertisements that the traders themselves were placing on the Facebook groups basically says they are great pets, they're great companions.
And in the comments, in people kind of responding to that, was there any indication at all that they knew that getting involved with this was dangerous? I mean, not dangerous in terms of the law, but dangerous in terms of their personal safety. Did anybody ask those sorts of questions like, how big will it get, or does it bite? You know, simple questions like that.
Not really. And that was, one of the many things that struck us as odd as well. I think there was just no sense of what it would entail in terms of keeping and managing and caring for wild animals. All of the posts really talked about how adorable they looked when they were cute, which is, it's really just sending a wrong message, because these are wild animals. They belong in the wild. They don't belong in a cage. A lot of these animals that you see, slow lorises, for example, were placed in really, really small cages that you wouldn't even put your own pet in. But they have to, because they are wild animals, and they tend to behave in a different manner in that sense, and that's the only way of controlling them. They just end up in cages in somebody's home.
I'm speaking today with Kanitha Krishnasamy, Program Manager for Traffic Southeast Asia, and we're talking about how Facebook and social media have become a new marketplace for wildlife. Up next, we find out about the protection that these animals are under within our local legal system. You're listening today to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You're listening to Earth Matters. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, Kanitha Krishnasamy, Program Manager for Traffic Southeast Asia. We're talking about how social media is providing a marketplace of sorts for the trafficking of wildlife. You mentioned some animals just now, birds, sun bears, slow lorises. Are most of these animals protected under the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, or Malaysia's Wildlife Conservation Act 2010?
Okay, so let's talk about the international regulation first. As far as CITES is concerned, 86% of all the animals that we recorded in trade are governed by CITES, which means they're either on CITES 1, where trade is completely prohibited, or they're on CITES 2, where trade is allowed but regulated. A vast majority of the CITES-listed species were on CITES Appendix 2, or CITES Appendix 2 animals, which means they can be traded. But going back to how this links to what happens in Malaysia, so CITES is enforceable if it involves international trade of endangered animals that are listed on the convention itself. Of all of the animals that we saw traded on Facebook, a vast majority of them are protected by Malaysia's own law. Close to 50% of them are considered totally protected, which means any trade domestically is completely prohibited. And looking at what is governed by CITES and looking at what is governed by our own law, which is the Wildlife Conservation Act 2010 in Peninsular Malaysia, what is really important from a CITES perspective is what percentage of non-native animals that are governed in Malaysia is considered a violation. So all in, we had 80 species. Of those 80 species, 69 of them are governed by CITES. And of these 69, 25 of them are non-native animals that are listed on CITES, which means, if you're looking at it overall from the 80 species, 36% of them are considered non-native CITES-listed species, which means unless they have a valid permit from the Wildlife Department, they have essentially violated the convention. And in Malaysia, we have a separate law that governs CITES trade. It's called the International Trade in Endangered Species Act, which came into force in 2008. And the fines for that are much higher than the Wildlife Conservation Act. If they are caught, and it doesn't apply to just individuals, it applies to businesses as well, you can be fined up to R1 million or face penalties or jail term of up to 7 years if found guilty. So the penalties are really high. Malaysia's got really, really strong laws. again, I think we just go back to the question of how blatant these individuals are. They just don't care. And I think they take some comfort in the fact that not all of them may be caught. Or if they do get caught, it's not going to happen immediately.
What challenges are there in monitoring illegal wildlife trading operations on social media? Because I'm guessing that another part of that feeling of blatantness is because, well, I mean, if nobody gets caught, it's fine. And if you don't feel watched, you know, then you don't feel as if you need to be careful.
I think the challenge that law enforcement agencies are already experiencing right now is just the scale and the viral nature of social media. It's just very difficult to keep up. Because while you're monitoring one page, five others are popping up, and you don't know how many other individuals are behind those pages. So the key challenge really is in keeping up with the pace of how social media engages and attracts people. And that really is the biggest challenge that enforcement agencies are facing. Having said that, the Wildlife Department is very aware of these issues. They are working closely with the Multimedia and Communications Ministry to monitor illegal activities where wildlife trade is concerned on social media, not just on social media, I think broadly on online or internet platforms. And so far, they have already arrested at least 54 individuals that we know of. They've rescued more than 60 different species. So they do recognize the severity of the issue, and they are putting in place a number of systems to address this problem. But again, they're playing catch up, really, because it's just so difficult to police all of it at the same time.
Are there also agents or middlemen who kind of work to remove clients from culpability? Because basically, the dealers manage to hide behind this, and the clients manage to hide behind, you know, privacy and anonymity.
I think what we're seeing really is there are many individuals who are playing various roles. So some of them are sellers, some of them are middlemen. Of course, the buyers themselves have a role to play. And it's very difficult to say who's helping each other out or who's trying to remove themselves from a situation. I think what usually happens is the person who is selling, who's making that transaction, if they are being investigated, have a higher chance of being caught in that sense. But what's really being missed out is who exactly is supplying these traders with these animals, who's functioning as middlemen, how quickly are they getting their sources, where are they getting their sources, are they getting it from within Malaysia only, or are they also sourcing out from outside of Malaysia? One of the animals, or rather some of the animals that we saw, I mentioned the non-native animals earlier, two of the most significant ones are the plowshare tortoise and the radiated tortoise, and these two species exist only in Madagascar. They're considered critically endangered. They're on CITES Appendix 1, which means any sort of international trade is completely prohibited. They're also listed in our Act. So it's really concerning because the trade that appeared in these numbers are quite high. And one of the posts even said, we can ship outside the country if you're interested. You know, so this to us and to the law enforcement agencies also means that they have individuals who are working to supply these animals to them who are working outside the country. And I think that's really the biggest challenge, identifying every single individual who's involved throughout the entire trade chain.
Has the demand for these animals always existed in Malaysia? Has social media just provided an outlet for the illegal trade to flourish, or is it also creating a demand of its own?
The demand, I think, has existed in Malaysia for a long time. I think the demand for a number of species has been well established for a number of reptiles like tortoises. I mentioned the two earlier, but Indian star tortoises, for example, were quite popular in pet shops in Malaysia before the new Act came into place. Birds, another popular one. I think birds are quite popular. You find them in pet stores. So I think what social media has done is just created a new, popular, more exciting platform where people can buy and sell animals without having to visit a pet store or negotiate for prices with a shopkeeper in that sense. They look at what they like, they look at the photo. Very often these traders, they post videos of these animals. And I think it serves as a more attractive way of buying and selling animals than the conventional way of, you know, getting into your car, driving to a pet store and picking out what you want.
It's like everything else, going online just makes it easy.
Exactly.
Are you in contact with Facebook? Have they responded?
We are in contact with Facebook, and they are equally surprised and shocked and concerned by this new phenomenon. And I think they fully realize that this is not specific to just wildlife trade. You know, criminals out there, if they're going to be engaging in criminal activity, they will find any ways and means to conduct their activity. And right now, it appears to be quite popular on social media. And Facebook has also stated clearly that this is against their terms of use. It is against their community standards. And they won't hesitate to take action if any specific illegal activity has been verified by themselves as well as law enforcement agencies.
And for members of the public who are users of Facebook, should we be harnessing this to report these groups as and when we see them, if we are invited to them, things like that?
Definitely. The first course of action should be to report it. And there's no shortage of avenues to report illegal activity. There are many number of NGOs who work in this country who would receive reports. The Wildlife Department also has a hotline. MICAT, another coalition of four NGOs in Malaysia, also runs a hotline. Traffic launched an app. It's called the Wildlife Witness app, and it can be downloaded free on Google or on Android phones. So there really is no shortage of platforms for members of the public to report any illegal activity. Even if they don't know if it's illegal, even if they suspect it's illegal, the first course of action should be to report it, and it's up to the authorities to investigate and take appropriate action.
What's the typical selling process for wildlife online? You know, earlier you talked about earlier e-commerce platforms like Muda and so on. Is it the same as buying a bicycle? You just talk about it, you exchange photos, and then you pay?
I think it is, but I think in many ways it's as simple as you've just explained it. They look at something they like. If they like it, they buy it. But I think what's also quite surprising to us is there is very little research that goes into what exactly they're buying and what they're getting themselves into. I mean, we've had this discussion in the office about, you know, if you're buying a house, if you're buying a car, you take a lot more care, you do a lot more research out there, just so you know what you're getting yourself into, you know what the risks may be. But there's very little of that actually happens where the selling and buying of animals is concerned. I think there's just that complete lack of understanding and awareness in terms of what they should be doing or what they shouldn't be doing. And there's even lesser consideration to the legality aspects and whether or not they're committing a crime.
Does the speed and anonymity of online commerce also present a problem in terms of monitoring illegal activities? Because, you know, payments can be just whizzing over our heads right now as we speak, and we wouldn't know.
Correct. So commercial trade platforms, in a sense, was more difficult because it was done quite covertly in that sense. You look at something, you make a payment, and it's done. Social media, I think what it's done is it's provide that level of visibility that you don't get with commercial trade platforms. So we've looked at 14 groups. There are maybe, you know, over 200 groups out there, and not all of them are closed. So the ones that are open, I think what it does is it provides some sense of how much trade activity is happening. And in some ways, I think it provides law enforcement agencies with a starting point to further investigations.
Traffic has said before that it wants online transaction and courier companies to join the fight for obvious reasons. Have these companies been cooperative?
In some cases, they have. So some of the transactions that were occurring on the 14 Facebook groups that we were monitoring mentioned things like, we can put it on a bus or we can post it to you. Now, post is a very, very common method of selling and buying and transporting animals from location A to location B.
That's horrible.
It is, because there's a high chance of the animal actually not surviving by post. With regards to engaging with transportation and logistics companies, we've been working more closely with companies like DHL. And I think there's interest, and there's certainly a huge space for logistics and transportation companies to do a lot more in terms of ending illegal trade. And we sincerely hope that, you know, the work, or rather the report that we've put out, provides a little bit more insight as to the different players that can participate in the fight against illegal wildlife crime. And we certainly hope that transportation and logistics companies will come forward and offer their assistance to help solve this problem.
Aside from that, how are you working with enforcement agencies on the issue?
So our biggest partner in this really is the Wildlife Department in Peninsular Malaysia, because this is about illegal wildlife trade. And because it involves wildlife, I think the primary responsibility, or rather the expectation from Malaysian civil society and just Malaysians on the whole, I think, is that because this is a wildlife issue, it needs to be addressed by the Wildlife Department. And yes, they recognize that this is their problem and they are working to address this issue. But it's so different and it's so widespread today that I think for us to effectively address this problem, it's going to need the help of so many people out there. Members of the public have a crucial role to play. Police, people like the multimedia and communications agencies. I think it's not as simple as just having one agency to be fully responsible of the issue. And they are. They recognize that is their role and they've already put a number of steps in place to address this problem. So we were working quite closely with the Wildlife Department, but I think what we also want to encourage is for other partners and other parties out there to come forward and help with this huge problem.
Are there right now existing policies and mechanisms in place to address online trade of wildlife specifically?
So as long as it involves wildlife trade, it is against the wildlife law.
In any form?
In any form.
Right.
Because the law is very clear. If you are dealing or buying or hunting in a specific animal, if it is listed on the Wildlife Conservation Act, if it is governed by CITES and listed in Malaysia's CITES Act, where it involves non-native species, it's very clear-cut. Either you can do it, and if you can do it, you need to get a license, or you can't do it.
And in most cases, you can't.
It happens in both manners, right? So there's a long list of animals in which you cannot trade in any animal, regardless of the circumstances. And in many cases, you can trade in wild animals. And this is quite common because, you know, we talk about pets, we talk about reptiles. Wildlife trade is not just animals. It's also plants and timber species and all of that. And we need those products for everyday use, timbers and fishery, for example. So there's a long list of animals that can also be traded, but it's regulated. It is very strictly regulated. And what we need to happen now is for people to abide by the law and conform to these regulatory processes.
So is there any need then for legislation or new legislation to keep pace with this? Or are our existing laws sufficient and it's more a matter of, you know, getting enough people or getting enough eyes out there in order to spot these infractions as and when?
I think the clear-cut regulation that governs wildlife trade is pretty strong. But perhaps what could be explored further is the different levels of policing on online trade. And I think this is where we look to advice from agencies like MCMC to tell us how far, you know, powers of either the Wildlife Department can extend or powers of other agencies like police can extend and how they can be brought into the fold to help fight this problem.
What are some final recommendations you'd have to counter this problem, especially to people listening who, like me, can't imagine, you know, can't fathom the idea of animals being smuggled in the post and, you know, orangutans being hidden in condominiums?
Yeah. Two overarching things, really. Number one, don't buy. Don't buy, don't fuel the trade, because a vast majority of what's happening, especially on social media platforms, is very likely illegal. Because if it was legal, there are other ways and methods of doing business. And clearly, based on these posts that we've seen, every single one of them, almost every single one of them, know that they are doing activities that is against the law. Number two, if you find something suspicious, just report it. And as I mentioned earlier, there are many ways in which people can report to the authorities or to NGOs. Traffic runs an app. It's called the Wildlife Witness app. The second thing to do would be, if anybody is suspicious that any illegal activity is taking place, they should immediately report. And in Peninsular Malaysia, there are a number of avenues, and I'll mention two specifically. One is a hotline that is run by an alliance of NGOs in Malaysia, which is called MyCat. And we've been running a hotline for the last decade, closely working with the Wildlife Department. So the number is 019-356-4194. It's open 24 hours. We receive reports at any point in time. And reporters can choose to be anonymous or not. And as soon as we receive the report, it is immediately channeled to the Wildlife Department for action. The Wildlife Department also runs a hotline. The number is 1-800-885151. So they can choose to report it to us or directly to the authorities at any point in time. And if it's something on Facebook, Facebook also accepts a report directly on their site, and they can also choose to do that if they wish to do so.
For more information, you can visit traffic.org. Thank you very much for coming in, Kanita.
Thanks so much for having me.
I've been speaking with Kanita Krishnasamy, Program Manager for Traffic Southeast Asia. We've been talking about how social media has enabled a thriving marketplace for wild animals as pets and why it should be stopped. You've been listening today to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.